Chapter 10, A Python Stage Tour. The tour was going well, a success everywhere. I'd pulled in Southampton, Oxford, and even Cardiff. I'd expected Cardiff to be a bit of a challenge, but full of gin and the feeling of superiority over mortals which commonly afflicts the adulated, I'd reached my zenith in a naughty and to this day illegal act upon the floor of an empty dressing room. The fact that this romance blossomed from love at first sight right through to mopping up in the 10 minutes available between acts 1 and 2 of Monty Python's first farewell tour merely seemed like a good idea at the time, Your Honour. Pressure of work, previously unimpeachable character, etc., etc. Sorry, where was I? Merely seemed to add piquancy to the occasion. However, Sunderland was a toughie. Only 2 entries in the Gay Guide. Open summer weekends only. No point in even trying, I thought, on a Wednesday night in March. And so, for the first time, I went with the others to eat after the show. But then I never felt happy in a place unless I'd scored. This thought nagged as I drank my way through the meal. I watched the others being interested in eating, chatting with their wives and non-wives. I had more to drink and decided to cross Sunderland off the map. On my way past the reception desk, I said, "Good grief, there's no one to go to bed with. Where are all the young men around here? This is absolutely dreadful." I went to my room and fell drunkenly onto the bed alone. I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning to find the night porter in bed with me, nude. He wasn't particularly my choice of person, but in the circumstances, he was welcome. He had let himself in with a pass key and, faithful to the hotelier's code, put customer satisfaction first. The satisfaction was mutual, and I even found myself wanting to stay in Sunderland, because, as things would have it, most of the junior staff apparently had similar devotion to duty. After Sunderland, we spent the weekend in Dallas, Texas, the birthplace of Python in the States. Odd that our television shows were first screened on the public broadcasting service of a town which was looked upon generally as a bit right-wing. We were there to assist in a fundraising week for that particular TV station, and I was there to get laid. This time, I got lucky with a Red Indian. After the glitter of the TV show, it was wham-bam straight back to his place, a 10-foot-by-6 lean-to with good stereo and curious rats at the back of a garage in a part of town tourists don't get to see. Wonderful. Back to the tour of England. We stopped off at Windermere for a night on our way down from Glasgow. A reporter did an interview with Mike, Eric and myself in my room. We all went out to eat, but I got bored with eating. I wanted sex, sex, sex. Walked halfway round Lake Windermere, lifeless, not a soul. I went back to my room in the hotel to go to bed. There was a knock on the door. It was the interviewer. He said, "Sorry to disturb you, I seem to have left my microphone." I said, "I bet you only did that so you could go to bed with me." He said, "Oh, all right." Whammo, zap! There was no holding me now. Stark, staring, raving, mad. New York was fun city. How about that time in Raffles Bar? A good-looking Puerto Rican. Vroom! Straight into the telephone boom with him. Didn't give a damn. We were young and in love. For 3 whole minutes we grappled with each other, but, out of concern for the other patrons of the bar, we left the door of the booth open. If we'd closed it, the lights would have gone on. 35,000 feet up in the air with an Eskimo in the toilet of a Boeing 74. "Stop! Stop this! Stop it! I've no idea which one of you co-authors wrote this. It is out of place, inaccurate, and rather strong. Don't you think we should build up more steadily from childhood sweethearts via light to heavy petting with girls, thoughts of marriage, etc.? You know very well there's not a shred of truth in it. Why should we take the risk of offending the vast majority of people who, quite justifiably, take offence at offensive things? Sorry. Anyway, we left Sunderland far behind, and as our Range Rover sped us on our way to Edinburgh at a cool 120 miles an hour on the hard shoulder with hazard lights flashing, I handed the bottle of Glenfiddich back to the curiously pallid hitchhiker, saying, "I can't understand why no one else is using this lane," and marvelled at the splendid unpredictability of life. In Edinburgh, I was very naughty indeed. Too young... "Look, I'm afraid I'm just going to have to stop this chapter."